Man, this is a morning that we've been looking forward to. We're really excited. We've been in the middle of a conversation that started on Orphan Sunday two or so weeks ago. And in this conversation, we have been saying as a church that we want to join God in his passionate quest to care for the vulnerable child. In this conversation, we've been saying that we refuse to do nothing when it is in our power to do something about the needs of vulnerable kids, not just in our community, but across the world. And this morning, we have an opportunity to respond in a much more tangible way to that, and we are thrilled for that chance. And man, one of the pivotal passages that we've been looking at these past couple of weeks is found in the book of James, James chapter 1, and verse 27, we're going to have it up on the screen so you can see it for yourself. But here's what it says. It says, religion or faith that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress. There is a religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless, and it's this: to look after orphans and widows in their distress. And if you're anything like me, when I was in school, then one of the questions I would always ask when I read something was, is this going to be on the test? And as far as this is concerned, this kind of is the test. If you want a really quick litmus test for the authenticity of your faith, if you want to know how genuine, legit, authentic your faith is, then simply ask the question, what am I doing to care for the vulnerable child? What am I doing to care for the most vulnerable people in our world, and none more vulnerable than a child? James says, hey, that will answer your question for you pretty quickly. And as we've been seeing the last number of weeks, there is a vulnerable child crisis in our world. It is real and it is wrong. Statistics say over 153 million orphans in our world. Kids who've either lost one or both parents, making their protection, making their provision, really uncertain, if not altogether eliminated. Children like your kids and my kids, like your nieces and your nephews, like the kids who go to school with your kids in our own world. But that doesn't even begin to describe the magnitude of the vulnerable child crisis in our world, because that number doesn't take into account the 400,000 kids in the orphan care system in our own country. Kids who, for some reason or another, have been removed from their family, removed from familiarity, because their parents cannot take care of them. And now they're in this transitional place. Kids like your kids like my kids like the kids your kids go to school with. That doesn't even take into account kids who are homeless, fending for themselves on the street. That doesn't take into account kids who are displaced from their countries and they're trying to find a new place to call home. That doesn't even account for kids who maybe have their parents, but they are experiencing neglect or worse, they're experiencing some degree of abuse. Kids who go to school with your kids like your nephew, kids like my kids. The vulnerable child crisis in our world is real and it is wrong. And God says one of the ways you know that this whole Jesus thing that you claim to believe is legit is you do something to care for kids like that. Matter of fact, if you do nothing to help the vulnerable child in our world, then heaven looks at your faith and at least calls it faulty, if not altogether fake. And as a church, hey, we want to live that genuine, authentic, Jesus-following faith that joins God in his heart and his quest to care for the vulnerable child. As a church, we want to say, God, we are in with you on this. We want to help care for the vulnerable child. Because we know this is a passion, this is a heartbeat of yours, and we want what matters to you to matter to us as well. Now, this doesn't mean fixing the crisis. This doesn't mean all of us are going to adopt. This doesn't mean all of us are going to get involved in foster care. It just means that all of us choose to do something to care for the vulnerable child, because after all, there is a version of faith that God considers faultless, and it's the kind that does something. We are not all going to do the same thing, but what we are saying as a church is we all believe we must do something. Not waiting for some special invitation or calling or feeling. James chapter 1 verse 27, by the way, in case you've ever wondered, is all the calling that you need. And as we head into 2020, we are excited to see a dream of this church become a reality. And that dream, the dream we've had, is that we would be a church family in which everyone who calls this place home would say, I am doing something to care for a vulnerable child in our world. I'm doing something. Again, it won't be the same thing, but I am doing something. And we're excited because 2020, we feel like we're in a place where we can finally take steps towards that being more than just a dream, but a reality. And this week we want to take a step towards doing our something, playing our part in being the miracle in the life of a vulnerable child. In fact, on your way in, I trust you picked up a card that looks just like the one I'm holding in my hand. And if you're a guest, by the way, welcome. I'm Kondo. I get to serve as one of the pastors. And we would ask, if you're a guest, by the way, that you let us know you were here with us. Would love the excuse to connect with you and say hi. But you see that on here, we have listed a variety of things, believing everybody in this room and everyone who calls Mission Point home can do at least something in this regard. And so last week we kind of talked through some of this list, and this week we want to invite you to take a step to saying, man, we've prayed about it, we've thought about it, and this is the something that we believe that we can and are going to do in 2020. By the way, on this card, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, some of you are already doing something to care for the vulnerable child. Some of you are working with organizations that Mission Point isn't directly connected to. Would love for you to let us know what that is, to know, hey, we're in this thing called Authentic Faith together. And so, you know, beneath where it says phone, you can just jot down other, you know, whether it's the organization you're serving with or something that you're doing in your response to God's heart for the vulnerable child. But later in the service, we're going to give you an opportunity to kind of mark this and take your step. Now, because I know the enemy would love nothing more than to sideline us with excuses, I thought we would look at a miracle story, a well-known miracle story in the New Testament that I think invites us away from making excuses. It's a story where you may have heard it. Jesus feeds nearly 20,000 people with just 5 loaves of bread and 2 walleye. And I think this story serves in so many ways as an excuse crusher, which is why we want to take some time to look at it. So if you have a copy of the Bible, Matthew chapter 14 is where we're going to be. If you don't have a copy, we're going to have the verses up here on the screen. You can follow along that way. Matthew chapter 14, and we are going to start reading at verse number 13. Matthew 14, starting at verse 13. Here's what it says. When Jesus heard what had happened, well, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary, quiet place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. Okay, I got to give you a little background so you can appreciate some of what's going on here in this passage. So, a prophet named John, who we may know as John the Baptist, got arrested one time. And he got arrested because he went public opposing the king's romantic relationship with his sister-in-law. Not John's sister-in-law, but the king's sister-in-law. And John just went on record and said, that ain't right. So he got arrested because of that. So while he's in prison, this king has a birthday party. And at this birthday party, the king's mistress's daughter, slash the king's niece, she performs a dance for the king and all of his guests, and she is fantastic. The king is so thrilled with the raving reports that this dance gets that he tells his niece, hey, I will give you anything that you want. When her mom, slash king's sister-in-law slash mistress hears about this, she immediately tells her daughter, oh, I know, you've got to ask the king to give you John's head on a platter. The daughter's like, that sounds like a fantastic idea. And so she goes and makes this request of the king. And so immediately the king executes John in prison and parades his head on a platter for all of his guests as a party favor. Side note, John was Jesus's cousin. When this story begins, that is the news Jesus just received. When he heard what had happened, this is what Jesus hears. And when Jesus hears this, he experiences heartache and grief unlike you have ever experienced in your life. Mm-mm. You don't know me, know what I've been through, right? That's how I picture you speaking in your head. That's true. I may not know you and what you've been through, but I have some sense of who Jesus is. And one of the things I do know about Jesus is he didn't have any calloused parts. He loved without reservation. He didn't have the luxury of emotional escapes. He didn't have the luxury of, you know, anesthetizing tactics. No, he felt emotion perfectly. You better believe when you heard what had happened to his cousin, his heart broke fully. And he did what a brokenhearted person may think to do. He attempted to steal away and just kind of be by himself, to just take a moment to grieve, to just take a moment to cry. But you saw the verse. People have no chill, man. When the public heard that, you know, Jesus had gone to a private location because his cousin is dead, people. They say, oh, well, I think he'll be happy to see us. And so they just invade his space and they show up in droves. Now, I just trust that there are godlier people than I in this room. I just trust that some of you would handle this better than I would, because if this were me, I would lose my righteous mind and everybody would know it. I would lose my stuff. What part of me getting in a boat and sailing off suggested to y'all that I want to hang out? I'm just curious. What part of me sneaking off to a private place gave you the impression I wanted to spend some time with you all? I'm just saying, I would be really, really upset at this point. All you people do is take, 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 take. No one cares what I need. I hurt too. I have needs too. My heart breaks too. Does anyone, can I just have a minute, man? That's what I would do, at a minimum. With probably a few more choice words. But then, spoiler alert, Jesus spends all day healing these intruders. And as if that weren't enough, he feeds all of them by the end of this particular day. And I'm just talking to someone who may be tempted to say, it's not a good time. I mean, I would do something for the vulnerable child in the world, but it's not a good time. I'm hurting too. We have stuff going on in our world. Life is crazy for us. It's just not a good time. One of the excuses that may keep us from being the miracle in the story of a vulnerable child, it's not a good time. And I'm just saying, if there was ever someone who could have said that, it was Heartbreak Jesus. And yet somehow, even in the midst of all of that, he hears the call and he tunes into the heart of his father and he cares for the needs of the hurting. Now, I don't know when you think is a perfect time. But I can assure you, there is never really a great time. There is never really a perfect time. And here's the thing, by the way. When God says, care for the vulnerable child, guess when he means? Yeah. Now. It's not a good time. By the way, that's why some of you haven't put a ring on it. I don't mean to meddle. Sometimes these things just come out because you're waiting for the perfect time. One day when we have all of our finances in order and have figured it all out, then I will. And y'all are waiting and waiting. And she's talking about you to all of her friends. You still believe in the myth of the perfect time, but there will always be one more piece to put in place, one more promotion before I become financially viable, one more year to finish college, I mean to finish graduate school, I mean to get PhD, I mean to get my first job, I mean to. There will always be one more hurt for us to feel fully healed from, and then, I'm just saying, now is not a good time, but one day when we are there, when you are where, I don't know, but we'll know when we get there. We're just not there yet. But when we get there, wherever there is, then we'll help. Come talk to us then. Now, it may not be the best time to do that thing, but now is always a good time to do something. The command of God is not waiting on you to feel ready. Stop using unresolved issues or imperfect circumstances as an excuse. Jesus didn't. Now, I can promise you, God is not going to ignore your busyness. He's not going to ignore your craziness. He's not going to ignore the hurts that you're carrying, Jesus, over the death of your cousin. He is not going to ignore the wounds that you are experiencing. He will meet us in them, but he invites us to join him now. Verse 14, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. I'm just trying to read the Bible in real time because whenever I do that, I'm like, wait, what? No way. There is no way that just happened. This is one of the most stunning responses in the Jesus Chronicles. Jesus lands on the shore and these people have beaten him by foot and they're waiting for him. Not a moment of solace that he hoped for did he actually get. And he steps up the boat and he looks at all of them and he has compassion on them? No. Like you mean 4 months later? How long was this boat trip? Like, no. He had compassion on these stalkers. What? Now, I can actually understand if Jesus, like, you know, like, man, just buckled down and bit his bottom lip and just bore with these people and just, like, forced himself to help them. I can picture that. I can picture if Jesus, like, threw, like, a big healing ball in some kid's face, like, take the healing, and just started throwing food all over the ground, just begrudgingly. I can understand that, but Matthew does us the honor of unveiling the heart of Jesus and revealing that beneath it all, he had compassion for these people. What? Now, it bears mentioning that compassion, while it's often experienced as this gut-wrenching emotional feeling, is actually not based in the gut-wrenching emotional feeling. Compassion is actually based in a choice called empathy. It's the practice of putting oneself in someone else's shoes. When Jesus sees them, he has compassion. He chooses empathy. He thinks not only of his own hurt, but somehow in that moment thinks about their hurt and puts himself in their shoes. I tend to see and feel the inconvenience to my hurt and feel the inconvenience to my hardship. When Jesus looked at this crowd, he saw scared moms with their sick kiddos. And he managed to say, if I were in her shoes, I would do the exact same thing. I get it. When he sees them, what he sees is grown-ups with their aging and ailing parents, with no ability to care for them. And I imagine Jesus is saying, if I were in your situation, I would have done the same thing. I lost my dad, Joseph, years ago. And I, what I would have done to help him. And he puts himself in their shoes. What he sees is blind women who have no concept of the color that his father has sprinkled in their world. And for one moment to be able to see, yeah, I would stalk somebody too. He puts himself in their shoes. What he sees is lame men who don't have the luxury of stealing off to a quiet, solitary place if they're hurting because they can't move. And Jesus says, I get it. If I were in your shoes. And as he chooses empathy, something happens inside of him. And he has compassion on them. And I'm just talking to someone who may be tempted to say, man, hurting kids is not my passion. Vulnerable kids are not my thing. I don't feel it for that kind of thing. So, you know, some people, they have that feeling. Not me. That's not the real question. You don't actually have to be passionate to be compassionate. You just need to be able to ask a question that puts you in someone else's shoes. And all of us can do that. If I were a kid in the foster care system without my home, what would I do? If something happened to our family and our kids were in the foster care system, what would we do? What would I hope somebody else would do? If I'd been waiting for years and years and years for a family to call my own, peeking out the window, hoping that today somebody would arrive with a new narrative for my future, what would What would I do if I was on the streets fending for myself before I even turned to my teen years? What would I do? What would that be like? What would I wish? What would I hope? And can I respond out of that? Compassion. Doesn't mean I'm not hurting. Doesn't mean I'm not unsure. But it means that even in the midst of my own hurt as his truth for Jesus, I'm still able to ask the question about somebody else's hurt. Don't use the lack of emotional response as an excuse. By the way, if you start to ask questions that put you in the shoes of other people, you will find your gut starting to react to brokenness. But I think we want to be led by the feeling instead of being led by the question. If I were in your shoes. Verse 50. As evening approached, the disciples came to him, to Jesus, and said, this is a remote place, man. This is the country. And it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Right? Because out of compassion, Jesus has been doing his something about the hurt around him. Matter of fact, he has been wrapped up in healing the hurts of these people all day that he loses track of time. And so his disciples have to come to him and draw attention to the hour, which I always love when people have to come and remind omniscience what's happening. So anyway, we want to remind you what time it is. Jesus, not sure you noticed, but it is late 30 out here, man. And they don't just remind him, by the way, of the time. They advise him on ministry strategy, best ministry practices. This is hilarious. Not the first time they would do this. But Jesus, here's the thing. While you were dealing with these people's hurt, a hunger situation developed. Because if it's not one thing, it's another. And if it's not another thing, then it's something else. So now, Jesus, you have two problems on your hands. So anyway, we got together and we had a conference. We took a vote and we all agreed, Jesus. First of all, good job. Your healing today has been so on point, man. You're the best healer we know. You've done great. But you've more than done your part. We feel like maybe you should call it a day right now and send this next problem away. Oh, man. But I'm just talking to someone who might be tempted to say, I've done enough. This next one is not my problem. I've done enough. I'm talking especially to those of us who have maybe taken steps to care for the vulnerable child. I'm talking to those of us who've maybe taken steps to care for the vulnerable child and it's gotten difficult. I'm talking to those of us who've maybe taken steps and it feels like it is day and night, from morning to night. And if it's not one thing, it's another. And if it's not something, something else seems to develop. And another complication comes up and then the paperwork breaks down. And then things get really difficult. And everything in us just wants to say, send this next problem away. We will do something, but we've done enough. And matter of fact, slow clap for us. So, Jesus, if you don't mind, can we have your blessing to be done for now? Because enough. I remember the thing we did one time for that vulnerable kid, Jesus. You remember. Enough. Okay, isn't it interesting, though? If I asked you, have you heard the story of when Jesus fed 5,000 / close to 20,000 people? Many of us in this room would say, yep, I've heard the story. If I asked you, hey, do you remember what Jesus was doing right before he fed the thousands and thousands of people? Many of us would need a lifeline, would be like, I'm going to have to call you back on that one. I need to think, what was he doing right before that? Was he maybe teaching? If you had asked me that question 5 days ago, I would have had to think, what was he doing before that? He had spent a whole day healing people. But isn't it interesting that the thing history recorded about this day was actually the thing that happened after the disciples thought, we've done enough?
I'm just telling you, some of the most beautiful parts of your story are going to happen on the other side of, I feel like I've done enough. I feel like I just, Jesus, sent this one away. And yet it just continues to persist. I find that so fascinating. Sometimes it's the obedience that comes after you feel like I've done enough that invites you into what you will be most glad that you did. The question is, Father, what are you inviting me to do next? Look at Jesus' classic response, by the way, verse 16. Jesus is so good. Read this in real time. Jesus replied, they don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. That's so good. Jesus is like, you take care of it. What? I just came to tell somebody, sometimes Jesus puts in you more than you know. I just came to announce that sometimes heaven has given you more than you have ever even stopped to imagine. And it will come into place beyond that place where you feel like I've done enough. I'm telling you, the church is so much greater a force for good in this world than it often realizes. Heaven is looking at us like, oh man, they don't get it. They are armed to change the world. I know they feel depleted. But just beyond this point where they feel like, send it all away, enough. Jesus says, you take care of it. The crisis is too great. No, you take care of it. No, but shouldn't the government? Yeah, except I told you to take care of it. But how? And honestly, to be fair, Jesus does ask them to do something that they legitimately don't have the resources to do. How do 12 people feed almost 20,000 people? That feels impractical. Their response makes sense if you ask me. Verse 17. Jesus? Yes, Peter. We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. And I'm just talking, by the way, to the person who might be tempted to say, I would, but I don't have enough. 153 million plus vulnerable kids. How can the church even? We don't have enough. What? We? A kid in our home? We don't have enough to. I don't have enough training, man. Listen, I don't feel enough of a calling. I don't have enough of that. I don't have enough life experience. I'm in high school, man. Send this issue away to the college students. The college students are like, don't put this on us, man. We have work to do. Put it on the empty nesters. Empty nesters are like, we just started to experience peace and quiet. Put it on the young couples. They already have crazy kids running all over their house. Put it on them. We don't have enough. I don't have enough training. I don't know enough about foster care. We don't have enough money. And yet, how many of you know Jesus really doesn't need much? A little is enough in his hands. If I call you to take care of something, I will take care of what you cannot. If James chapter 1 verse 27, let me just pause for a second and preach for a minute. If James 1 27 says, you take care of the orphan, you take care of the widow, it means he will give and take care of whatever we feel we cannot once we start to step into those spaces. I don't know what you feel like you don't have enough of, but the call doesn't change and the supply will show up. Did I mention Jesus doesn't need much?
Honestly, one of my new favorite verses in this story is right here in verse 18. Jesus' response, he says, "Bring them here to me," he said. That is awesome. They actually tried and convinced Jesus. No, if you understood our situation, Jesus, and how little we have, you would. And Jesus' response is beautiful. Bring it here to me. That stirs me so much. Jesus is not bummed. Jesus is not discouraged. Jesus is not disappointed with what they feel like isn't a lot. He says, oh, no, 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 bring it over here. They were really thinking when they said, we only have. Jesus would be like, oh, somebody should have told me that. Yeah, that's definitely impractical. And Jesus' response is like, No, bring it here. No, but you don't understand. I'm such a messy past, Jesus. Like, I don't. Bring it here. No, you don't get it. Like, I drop children on their heads. Yeah. Bring it here. Bring it. No, you don't understand. We can only adopt one. Yeah, bring that. I only have enough strength to pray for someone. Get over here. Bring it. But we don't have enough money. Yeah, bring it here. You know how you think that you're somehow going to convince Jesus by telling him you only have? He doesn't need much. I love his response. He's like, bring it, but we could only rake. Bring the rake over here. We will change the world of a child with a rake. Bring it over here. I love this verse. I can only babysit. Bring it here. And thank you, because the person sitting next to you. And only when the disciples brought what they had did they become a part of this miracle story. Come on, read it again. Up until this point, they're observers. They're observing the miracles all day. This becomes their entry point. Which, by the way, I find hilarious. They're like, Jesus, whew, it's been a long day, man. Let's call it a day. We've been out here. Jesus, like, you haven't done anything. I've been working. You've been watching. Sometimes that's the church. Like, yeah, this is such a big, whew, you haven't done anything. But regardless, when they do, they enter into this miracle story. This is how the story ends out. Verse 19. And he, Jesus, directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to the heavens. He gave thanks and broke the loaves. I'm going to watch this video. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. And you've got to want to watch this video. Like, I'm sorry, Jesus, we just gave you 5 loaves. But when we put it in your hand, you did something. And when we got it back, we're like, what is this? We don't even recognize it. Jesus is like, that's what happens when you bring it. It looks nothing like it did when you were holding onto it in your hands. This is so awesome. Anyway, back to the word here. It says, they ate and were satisfied. And God, may we be part of the satisfied stories of vulnerable kids in our world. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. I don't know what you believe about who Jesus is, but I'm telling you, he is able to do immeasurably, abundantly, above anything you could possibly ask, anything you could possibly imagine, pressed down, shaken together, and running over with leftovers. When we bring what may seem like not enough, say, this is all I can do, Jesus. He said, bring it. Bring it. And we are believing for that in 2020. We know he's calling us to be a part of the miracle story for a vulnerable child. And I'm telling you, it'll start when you do something. We believe he's calling each of us to help do for a vulnerable child what that child cannot do for themselves. And we believe he's calling each of us to do the something we can, not the something we can't, by bringing what we have, not by bringing what we don't. Regardless of how small it feels in this season. And by the way, I'm painfully aware that, man, the trend in our culture at this time of year is to take a sermon like this and talk about, hey, bring a year-end offering, give us some more money. Well, we don't care. God will supply. We know that. But if you would bring what you have for the sake of a vulnerable child and watch what he will do in this story and watch what will happen to your story. We are believing he's calling us to do something. No excuses, no exemptions. And we believe what was true in this story will be true for us. Man, I'm standing on that and I'm peering over into the next calendar year with anticipation. I believe if we bring it, he will bless it. And when he blesses it, y'all, it won't look like you remember it looking when you last saw it. I believe if we do our something, he will do his something. And woo! And when he does, what started like an obstacle turns into overflow. Send them away. Jesus, no, 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 no. Don't bail now. We are just getting to the good part. What started as not enough turns into too much and a little extra. What started as a crisis became a miracle in the story of the church. They now get to see thousands of kids filled with joy and satisfied anew. I'm telling you, man, I can't wait. And for some of you in particular, I can't wait. I love what happened for these disciples, and I'm telling you, I'm believing it for my family. I'm believing it for your family. I love that. I love that these disciples started with like, but we don't have enough. And then when they bring it at the end of the story, I don't know if it says that in your Bible, they ended up with how many basketfuls? I'm sorry? 12. How many doggy bags? 12. How many disciples? From not enough to, we got to take some home. He's the God of overflow, y'all. And I'm just telling you, you think you are going to be part of bringing the little you have and being part of the miracle story of a little kid without a 2020, I'm telling you, man, is the year of the doggy bag. Watch out. I do believe that as we are the miracle and the story of a vulnerable child, we will see miracles in our own stories. Not because God owes it to us, but again, because he will not be outgiven by anybody. And like we said last week, he will not be out-miracled by anyone.